From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears, joined alongside here with Michael Lev. Michael, how's it going? You're alive. You made it back to Tucson safely from your cold trip in Pullman, Washington.
I'm happy to be here. It's like 70 degrees outside. It's sunny. Could have worn shorts today. Decided to go with the jeans, but I'm wearing a t-shirt right now. Life is good.
I remember watching your Facebook Live before the game, seeing you in your beanie and your big jacket. Something that you probably don't wear unless you're going to Pullman, Washington this time of year.
I'm really, like, sort of thin-blooded, though. So, like, if it gets into the 40s, you know, here in Tucson at night, I probably will break out the jacket. Definitely break out the beanie. As you know, as you can see, I don't have a lot of protection up top these days. So, you know, a lot of the heat escapes from your head. But if, you know what? It's actually one of the cool things about the Pac-12 is that there's so many different climates and so many different types of atmospheres. Like, I don't think Arizona handled the atmosphere well, needless to say, Saturday night. And it was a small crowd. It was only 22,400 people in the building. The students were gone for Thanksgiving, but they just looked a step slow, like, the whole night. Like, I was just watching the first quarter of the game last night. I haven't gotten a chance to watch the whole thing yet. And there were several plays in the first quarter where you're like, oh, they've got James Williams, or they got Max Borgi. Like, they got him pinned, and they were able, you know, the running backs were able to get around them. They were able to elude tackles. The play that Kevin Sumlin referred to, where Lucas Haversick got the, I think they called it a horse collar, but it was a face mask. Yeah. Like, Anthony Pandy had the kickoff returner in his tracks and completely whiffed. So I don't know if that's because they weren't used to the cold, like, maybe they were rusty from the week off, but they're going to have to tackle a lot better against Arizona State than they did in that game. That was maybe the most alarming thing of all to come out of that, was just how bad the tackling was.
Was it really surprising, though? Because we always kind of had a hunch that it was either going to go one of two ways. They got a week off. They're riding off a two-game win streak. They're going to come off fresh and could compete against Washington State. Or this thing is going to get off the tracks in a hurry, and that's what we saw. And I really wasn't surprised.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I'm not surprised that they lost, and I'm not surprised that they lost kind of convincingly. But, dude, 55 points in the first half of a game? I mean, what the heck is that? Right? It was just kind of like, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I mean, they're fumbling the ball, unable to handle the kickoff. Like, I'm sitting there in the press box thinking to myself, okay, it's 34-14. They're getting the ball back, right? Kind of midway through the second quarter. If they could score here and have it be 34-21 going into halftime and then get the ball to start the second half, they can make a game of this. And what happens instead? The short kickoff, Cedric Peterson runs up, unable to field it, goes all the way into the end zone for a touchdown. Then it's just, you know, it's a laugher at that point. I don't really know why they had so much difficulty hanging onto the football. It was cold, but it wasn't wet. Like, it wasn't windy. I mean, there was no precipitation whatsoever. J.J. Taylor's, like, slipping on the turf, you know, like, they're in the first quarter every 5 minutes as a tour comes through here at the Lowell Stevens football facility. But I don't know, like I said, the atmosphere, the conditions, the environment, they didn't handle it very well at all.
Now moving forward, you kind of got the vibe from Kevin Sumlin today in his press conference that the game is what it was. You know, we got blown out. We lost pretty handedly. It was bad. Now we're moving forward to ASU, which is a huge week considering Arizona needs a win in order to be bowl eligible. I mean, of course, there isn't the nice headline of winner of this one goes to the Pac-12 South Championship, considering Utah won that this past weekend. But first round of Kevin Sumlin, Herm Edwards in the Territorial Cup. I mean, Arizona's moving forward to this rivalry game, and it's expected to be pretty big.
I would say that normally in those press conferences, it's about 50-50 as far as, like, talking about the previous game and the next game. Today, it felt like about 75% on the next game and maybe 25% on Washington State, right? Like, it really was a let's turn the page. I mean, you have to, if you're Arizona, you have to view that game as an aberration, right? Like, it was reminiscent of Utah, it was reminiscent of Houston, but it wasn't reminiscent of what we've seen over the last month or so from this team, right? Even in the loss at UCLA, we've talked about this several times. They played really well in that game, and then they played their best game of the season against Oregon, and they played pretty solid against Colorado. It wasn't like a great game against a beat-up team, but they did enough to win. Probably really was more of a 10 to 12 point game and ended up being an 8-point game, but they played well. And they just laid an egg at Washington State. It doesn't surprise me in the sense that, you know, we talked about this extensively before the game. What is the impact of that Utah game earlier in the day? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think whether they will admit it or not, subconsciously, it had some sort of impact. Like, we're no longer playing for the Pac-12 South Championship. If we lose this game, is it really that big of a deal? It's a kind of a dangerous mentality to have. So now let's fast forward. We're in this situation where they have to win this game in order to make a bowl. And there isn't a big difference between finishing 7-5 and 6-6. But man, is there a big difference between finishing 6-6 and finishing 5-7, not going to a bowl game, losing to your rival for the second year in a row. I think the perception of the entire season really hinges on this game, mm-hmm. Saturday.
Looking ahead at the kind of the X factors of this game, one of them being Sean Poindexter, I thought Kevin Sumlin made a very interesting comparison. Mm-hmm. First of all, before I get started with this, he used Chris Carter because all I do is catch touchdowns, because all of Sean Poindexter's most recent catches have been, in fact, touchdowns. It's the last six, correct?
Six in a row, yep.
So he went more into the comparisons, and I thought I would never hear this coming out of Kevin Sumlin's mouth. He compared Sean Poindexter to Mike Evans, a player that he coached at Texas A&M and was a first-round draft pick and went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I never thought Sean Poindexter, a junior college transfer, a player that a lot of people thought, he's tall, but is he really a playmaker for Arizona? And now here we are in the last week of the season, Kevin Sumlin's comparing him to Mike Evans.
Yeah, he said their backgrounds were somewhat similar. I think he said that Mike Evans was a one-year high school player, you know, so he didn't have as much of a football background coming in to A&M, and that's obviously that is similar to Sean Poindexter. Their bodies are similar. Mike Evans is, you know, he's the king of the jump ball, right? I mean, yeah. He's just like a 6'5 guy who just wins those 50-50 battles. And Sean Poindexter's won a lot of those, too, and he's also 6'5". He said that Sean isn't quite as strong and bulky as Mike Evans, but, you know, there's still time, and he's still getting bigger. And he also said, interestingly, that the guys who come through here, the scouts, have been asking a lot about Sean. So there's been a lot of questions about whether, you know, Sean Poindexter's a draftable player. I see a draftable player. Yeah. You know, I don't think he's going to be a first-round pick. I don't even know if he's going to be a second-day pick, which is the second and third round these days. But I think he's going to be drafted because you don't find those tools very often, mm-hmm. right? 6'5 guy who can run, who's a hard worker, competitive, smart, has really made a lot of progress during his time here. Like, I think you like the intangibles, the character, all of those things. It's a really good story. It's one of the feel-good stories of this season for Arizona. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, on the other side of the ball, the other side of the field, you have a similar-looking prospect, someone who is going to be a first-round pick. And I got to tell you, Justin, like, I don't know who's going to cover N'Keal Harry for this team. I mean, you could say, all right, we're going to put Lorenzo Burns on him the whole time, but that's a mismatch for just about anybody. I think Lorenzo's been really good this year, with the exception of that Washington State game. But he's like 5'11", 180. N'Keal Harry's like 6'4", 220.
Yeah.
And he's a beast. We saw it in last year's game. He caught two touchdown passes against Arizona on balls that were just perfectly thrown, that you like couldn't defend them. You know, they were those kind of back shoulder, high point type plays, like using the narrowest part of the field right down the sideline. And we're going to see more of the same of that. And what makes it even harder is that they also have the leading rusher in the Pac-12. So you can't just say, all right, we're going to devote a safety to defending N'Keal Harry, because that leaves you vulnerable against the run. What would you do? Pick your poison.
Of those
two, man.
Which one do you devote your resources to? It's tough. I would have to say you would have to key in on N'Keal Harry, because Arizona's secondary is vulnerable. I mean, not I'm not talking about the safeties, because Scotty Young Jr., who, by the way, is going to miss the first half of the ASU game because of a targeting call, which, by the way, he got reviewed for targeting twice in that game. But the second one was called targeting, and now he's going to miss the first half. But anyways,
I'm gonna go the other way.
You're gonna go, you know, Benjamin.
Stop the run. Yeah, always stop the run first. If you force,
it would seem like stopping the run makes sense for a rivalry game like this.
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely, yes. And here's the thing: if you force Arizona State into third and long situations, you know they're gonna pass. At that point, you can say, okay, we're gonna have a safety over the top against N'Keal Harry because we have forced them to throw. So my game plan, and especially in a rivalry type game where it's all about kind of intensity, the trench battles, I would focus on stopping the run. N'Keal Harry is going to get his. Let's make sure Eno Benjamin does not get his.
That's a very good point. I didn't even think of that, but that is a very good point. But looking ahead at this game, Michael, it's, you know, you talk about, I'm not going to say it's a tale of two teams because they've kind of had similar paths-ish in some way. I mean, we look at Herm and the non-conference schedule. He had a pretty big win against Michigan State at home, where Arizona struggled in the non-conference slate. And then ASU kind of got off to a rocky start in Pac-12 play. Arizona kind of got off to a rocky start, but they've won the last couple of games, where ASU, they've also won the last couple of games, and they swept the LA schools, which is a pretty big deal in the state of Arizona. But now here we are. They're 6-5. Arizona's 5-6. And I don't know. How do you just sum up both these teams heading into this week?
Look, here's the thing, okay? Kevin Sumlin has been striving for consistency all year long. We still haven't experienced it here, right? Like, they play so well against Oregon and Colorado and then just totally, you know, stink up the joint in Pullman, right? Arizona State, even when they lose, they are competitive in every single game. They have not lost by more than 7 points in a single game this year. They have found that level of consistency. That, to me, is the biggest difference between the teams, even though there's only a one-game difference in their records. So you kind of know with Arizona State what you're going to get in any given week. You don't know with Arizona. That being said, at home, Arizona's been pretty consistent, right? The games they've lost against BYU and USC, they lost by 5, they lost by 4. You know, that USC game could have gotten away from them, but they rallied back. They've been competitive here. Mm. We've seen, you know, except for the Oregon State game, the best of Arizona has been out here on this field at Arizona Stadium. So I think they're going to show up. I think we're going to see a really good, sound performance. We're going to see a ton of effort in this game. I think you always see that in this matchup. And they have all the motivation in the world to win this game, right? They lost last year's game. It's kind of a weird game in a lot of ways, and we'll probably get into that later in the week, all the stuff that happened with the end of the first half, Khalil Tate getting hurt, the punt return that was called back on a missed call. They've got all that stuff. They've got the carrot of, you know, having to win to become bowl eligible. You know, Arizona State's already bowl eligible. They don't have that coming into this. And they have what happened last week. Like, you know, really kind of embarrassing performance on national TV. So I think all the intangibles are in Arizona's favor. But, you know, it's like Kevin Sumlin said, you got N'Keal Harry and Eno Benjamin and a really good quarterback and Manny Wilkins and a pretty good offensive line. You know, it comes down to execution on the field. And that's where I have some questions.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Sumlin has been a part of a lot of rivalries. He listened to them all in his press conference. Which one is our guy, Ari Alexander, over at KVO? He asked a pretty interesting question about what is his favorite rivalry trophy. I got to ask you, Michael Lev, what's yours?
I don't know about the trophy itself, but as far as the matchups go, I think Michigan-Ohio State is definitely in the conversation in the top three of those cool and unique rivalries. I mean, it's weird in that it's like they're not intrastate, but it just goes so far back, you know, like Woody and Bo back in the day. I mean, it really doesn't get much better than that. It always seems like there are huge stakes. And again, there are this particular time with one of those teams being knocked out of the college football playoff. You know, the winner goes to the Big Ten championship game against my Northwestern Wildcats, interestingly enough. And the loser, you're out. You know, you're not going to make the CFP with two losses. That one stands out to me. USC-UCLA stands out to me because it's intra-city. I don't think there's any other rivalry in college football that's quite intra-city. Like, they're in the same... Like, usually...
Carolina-Duke. They're, like, 7 miles apart, but it's Durham and... Yeah,
yeah. I mean, most of the time, like, let's say Washington State. I mean, that's Pullman. Yeah. That's the only game in town, right? You don't find two schools in the same city that play against each other. And then, of course, Army-Navy. Yeah. Right, which is a really cool. I mean, everyone loves watching that game. It's kind of like in mid-December, and it means so much to those schools. Yet there's like also this great element of sportsmanship, I feel like, between them. So those are some of the cool ones that stand out to me.
You bring up sportsmanship, but they also really strongly dislike each other. Yeah, I mean, it's a rivalry game.
Of course. Of course. I mean, you know.
And plus, they always have great uniforms. Army-Navy game in the last maybe 10 or so years have had probably one of the best uniforms of college football.
We could have a whole podcast with on uniforms, and we probably should bring Ryan Finley in for that, because that's kind of his thing. But I was kind of out on a limb on Saturday in liking the Notre Dame pinstripe uniforms.
Oh, no.
Like, I think that...
It's a no for me, dog.
They did a great job, in my opinion, of combining, like, the look of the Yankees, because they were playing in Yankee Stadium, like, with the Notre Dame kind of colors, just hints of kind of the navy and the gold. So, I don't know. I was pro the pinstripe uniforms. And I feel like I was in the minority, a minority of maybe like three or four people in the entire country who felt that way.
And they played against Syracuse, right?
Yeah, Syracuse had those gross, like, gradient orange and blue things. I think we got to get rid of the gradient look.
Yes, but for Syracuse, a lot of those fans living in New York, they're big-time Yankees fans. I looked at those uniforms kind of... Like, if I was a Yankees fan, I would have been disgusted by it. Like, how dare you, one, try to bring the classic pinstripe look to college football, and then you do with that, where if you're going to go with a pinstripe look, you might as well do the whole uniform, right? Make it actually look like you're wearing the Yankee jersey over the pads.
That would have been kind of cool.
And, like, instead of the NY, have, like, the ND as that kind of style?
I would have been in favor of that. Full-on pinstripe, head-to-toe.
All the way down.
Yeah, that would have been pretty awesome. It was a home game for Notre Dame. Yeah. You know that, right? Like, there was script Notre Dame in each of the end zones. So, I don't know. I liked Arizona's uniforms Saturday night. The all-whites with the matte helmets.
And it's a decal. That's what did it. Instead of the all-red, like what they've been doing the last year, they went with a classic.
A different decal?
Yeah,
okay.
It was like more of a classic look.
I even noticed that. What do you think they're going to pull out for this Saturday?
Better not be chrome helmets. I do not care what Arizona does, as long as they do not pull out the chrome helmets. I'm thinking,
what is the most traditional? Would it be the white helmets, blue jerseys, and white pants?
You can go
is that the most traditional?
You can go that route for tradition. If, you know, this was like 90s, I would say more of the Mike Stoops era. You would go navy blue helmet, red jersey, and navy blue pants. But I don't think these Arizona uniforms look good in that combo. That's just me, though. So I would say white helmet, navy blue jerseys, and white pants. I think that would be the go-to look.
They did that once this year, right? Didn't they go kind of full-on Desert Swarm?
They did.
For what game was that? Was that the USC game? I'm trying to remember what
Homecoming
game it was.
Yeah. So it might have been.
Yeah.
But
so I that's what I would do.
With, you know, the blue face mask?
You know what? They need to have a Desert Swarm type of mentality for this game. Right, I mean, they've got to be the more physical team. So they got to stop the run. They got to win on special teams. Basically, all the things they didn't do at Washington State.
Real quick, bold prediction for this week. It could be anything. It could be something
bold.
Bold.
I think you said
bowl. Yeah, but we're talking about bowl. Oregon's big time center. No,
all right,
bold.
I got it. Shun Brown is going to take a punt back for a touchdown. Hasn't happened all year. I thought it was going to happen at some point earlier this year. He had one called back against ASU last year. Looking at a quick look at ASU's statistical profile, not that great as far as net punting goes. So there's my bold prediction. Shun Brown, punt return touchdown.
I'm going to say Teddy Bruschi is the honorary captain before kickoff. That is my bold prediction. I mean, they brought in some pretty big names for honorary captain for the coin flip before the game. I think with a game like this, Teddy Bruschi is going to make some time from his busy schedule covering the NFL. He's going to make his way to Tucson and be the honorary captain. That's my bold prediction. All right. Well, we can talk more about this territorial cup. We could talk about this all day long.
Hey,
but
tell everybody about Wednesday.
About to do that. So Wednesday, myself, Michael Lev, and Ryan Finley, we will be at Frogenfurken at noon rather than Thursday, because Thursday we're going to be stuffing our faces full of turkey and other stuff. We're going to be doing the live podcast on Wednesday at noon, breaking down everything you need to know about the Territorial Cup.
Nobody's going to get any work done Wednesday, right? So skip school, skip work, come out to Frogenfurken, come out and say hi. Come ask us some questions about the Territorial Cup or whatever. We're happy to have you.
It's going to be a good time. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. All you got to do is download it. It's either on the App Store or Google Play. For Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.